Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attendance as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Little versus Illinois Department of Revenue, Mr. Ehrlich.
May it please the court, counsel. The defendants claim that they terminated the plaintiff based on an IAD investigation of a complaint made by a white casino employee by the name of Kevin Kickle. The plaintiff and his wife had heard this casino employee in May of 2000 make a comment that he had some, quote, dumb fucking niggers, close quote, working for him. Mr. Little, the plaintiff, went over to him and warned Kickle that if he ever heard a statement like this ever again, he would report Kickle to the IGB, the Illinois Gaming Board. The gaming board must approve and license and certify any employee working for a casino. In approximately July 1st of 2000, the same casino employee approached Mr. Little, made a half-hearted attempt to try to explain that he wasn't a racist despite what Mr. Little heard. The plaintiff rejected his apology, if that's what it was, and again warned him that if you ever do something like this or say something like this again, I'm going to report you to the IGB.
Later, could you tell us a little bit about the responsibilities of your client? What was his job description? What did he do there?
His broad job was to ensure that the casino and the casino employees properly adhere to the IGB rules. To put it in layman's terms, that they run a fair game. One example of his duties is to make sure that slot machines, for example, are properly inspected. If there's a problem, that those are taken out of service, they're properly inspected and approved before they're allowed to be used again. He's also to be watching for counterfeit money, and he also has within his realm to make sure that casino employees are doing what they should do and not doing what they shouldn't do.
With respect to the honesty of the game, but how about with respect to other matters of employee relations?
In the job description, I'm not going to catch all about, I think in this case, it was making sure generally that the rules of the gaming board are enforced and policies adhered to. Broadly speaking, this was within his realm to make a report against this employee about this type of conduct. That was not disputed.
Is it your understanding that your opponent does concede that his counseling this employee about the way he handled the employees of the casino was within his job description?
They don't dispute that. They dispute what Kickle's claims happened. They don't dispute that Little had the authority to make a complaint about this employee when he heard him make the
statement. Did he have the authority to deal with the employee directly and counsel him about his missteps and require him to adhere to a different approach?
It's more along the lines of, in this situation, if Mr. Little is following the textbook situation, he would have reported this particular incident to the IGB. It was not something that Mr. Little, the employee was not Mr. Little's employee, he did not supervise him, but he had the authority to observe and to make a complaint or report about him. Something along the lines that happened at the casino boat itself, there was a direct incident right there while the employee was on duty, Mr. Little could take action right then and there. He would also then report this to the IGB officials.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Little chose not to take action because it happened off the clock at another casino. But he did warn this individual about this. On July 1st, when the employee probably recognized that Little was not going to play ball with him, so to speak, the employee made a complaint to plaintiff's supervisors, Mark Finn, to, I think it's Sergeant Lieutenant Fullman, and to Lieutenant Dubell, claiming that Mr. Little had threatened him about intervening in some employee incident that the casino employee had with a black female casino employee. According to Kickles, plaintiff claimed that this black female employee was a cousin of his and that there was some sarcastic comment that the employee had made to this black female employee. That female employee had reported that comment to casino supervisors. The IAD report itself shows that...
This arguably is another instance, though, of where he's doing something other than watching the gaming machines and making sure that they're honest.
Yes. The IAD report itself shows that plaintiff and the black female employee were not cousins. The IAD report itself also shows that there was no possible way Mr. Little could have known about this incident between Tickles and the black female employee. Statements of the female employee, of a supervisor, casino employee, and of Tickles all indicate that this was a confidential matter. It was discussed confidentially. Nobody had any clue how Mr. Little could have ever heard about this episode. Plaintiff presented evidence in his response to the motion for summary judgment that the two IAD investigators assigned to investigate Tickles' complaint had a history of either fabricating evidence and testimony or of outright lying and fraudulent conduct. One investigator, Carlos Olet, had falsified an investigative report against another black revenue agent by the name of Archie McDonald. According to Mr. Olet and this other IAD report, he had shown a photograph of Archie McDonald to two bartenders. The bartenders identified the photo of Mr. McDonald, saying, "Yeah, I know him. He's a regular at the bar, and he may or may not have been there on the day in question, but he's definitely a regular at this bar." Sam Rossi gave a deposition and affidavit testifying that he further conducted an investigation on this matter, took a photo of Archie McDonald, who's a black revenue agent, just like Mr. Little, spoke with the two bartenders, took Mr. McDonald down to meet the two bartenders. The two bartenders say, "I never saw any photo of Mr. McDonald before. I don't know what this guy Olet is talking about. I don't know who on earth this guy McDonald is. I don't recognize him, let alone whether he's a regular at my bar. I've never seen him before." When Rossi presented this evidence to the Department of Revenue, they withdrew the termination and gave Mr. McDonald full back pay. Plaintiff also presented evidence that the other IAD investigator, a Mr. James Oliver, had a history of lying and engaging in fraudulent conduct. Mr. Oliver used to be a police officer with the Chicago Police Department. On at least 7 or 8 occasions, while he was on the clock with the Chicago Police, he took his police vehicle, drove over to the job he was moonlighting at, which was an investigator position with the Secretary of State, drew a paycheck from the Secretary of State for the same 8-hour shift he was getting a paycheck from the police department. Chicago Police Department did an investigation, found those allegations were true, were about to bring formal charges to terminate him. Oliver resigned that position and was told by the Secretary of State, "Either resign or we're going to fire you." There was an IAD investigation done of Oliver by the Department of Revenue, particularly by the chief investigator by the name of Howard. Howard, in his deposition, confirmed that, yeah, Oliver did do this. Howard also said that Oliver denied that he engaged in any such conduct, claimed that he completely voluntarily resigned from the Secretary of State and the Chicago Police Department, had nothing to do with any charges of discipline. Howard said that was untrue.
Mr. Ehrlich, how do these pertain to your case in the procedural posture it comes to us in?
The defendant knew about these incidents with Olet and with Howard. Plaintiff, when Oliver was assigned to investigate him, complained about Oliver being involved in this investigation, claimed that Oliver had no credibility and he was biased. He was specifically referring to Oliver's prior incident. There was a situation where during the IAD investigations, Olet and Oliver claimed that plaintiff said X. Plaintiff and the two union officials said he never said X, he said Y. The decision makers who made the call to terminate the plaintiff, knowing the credibility problems of Mr. Oliver and Olet, still blindly adhered to what the IAD investigators said, ignored and totally discounted what plaintiff and two union reps who were present throughout the entire IAD investigation said. That's why it's important. If we're dealing with whether the defendants have an honest belief in what the report findings were, our argument is that they could not possibly have had that. At a minimum, there was an issue of fact about this for the jury to decide because they knew that there were problems with the credibility of the two IAD investigators, and there were clear contradictions in the IAD report. And that's why I raised this, and that's why I raised it below. Mr. Oliver, although Howard conceded that Oliver lied during the IAD investigation and engaged in the prior conduct, and although Oliver lied at his deposition that I took of him, there was never anything whatsoever done to Oliver. Oliver is therefore also relevant as a comparative situation for the plaintiff with respect to the retaliation claim. The IAD report claimed that the plaintiff lied when he said that he heard Kickles make this racist statement back in May of 2000, allegedly because there was nothing at all to corroborate whether or not Kickles ever made this statement. Yet, the defendants admitted during their depositions, and the IAD report also shows this, that there was evidence that corroborated this. This corroborating evidence was mentioned to Joe Hoy, who was one of the defendants and who was involved in the pre-disciplinary meeting. Kickles admitted, as one of the evidence that's noted in the report, in which was told the defendant...
Wasn't Oliver black?
Yes, he was. As a comparative, I'm referring to the retaliation claim. Kickles admitted that he was at the casino at the very same time in late May of 2000 when the plaintiff said he heard Kickles make this statement. So the defendants were aware that there was corroborating evidence of this. Plaintiff's wife was with him at the time. She also heard the statement. At the pre-disciplinary meeting, Joe Hoy asked the plaintiff if he could talk to his wife to see whether or not she would confirm that Kickles made the statement. Plaintiff said, absolutely, yes, you can. Hoy made no attempt to do so. Defendants have brought up in their brief, and we mentioned this ourselves in our brief, that during the IAD investigation with Oliver and Mr. Ouellette, the plaintiff told them about the wife being a witness, but did not want them, Oliver and Ouellette, interviewing his wife because of the hostility and profanity that was used during the IAD investigation. But he clearly told Joe Hoy at the pre-disciplinary conference, she will talk to you, yes, you may speak to her and get a statement from her. That was never done. In lieu of this evidence, the defendants claim there was absolutely nothing at all to corroborate Mr. Little's claim that he heard Kickles make the statement. And clearly, on the face of the IAD report and under admissions of the defendants at their depositions, they knew that there was evidence to corroborate this. The IAD report accused the plaintiff of refusing to answer questions during the IAD investigation. Oliver Ouellette and the individuals who I deposed, who were the decision makers, admitted that there was only one question that allegedly the plaintiff did not answer. That was a question about what the plaintiff and Mr. Kickles spoke about on July 1st of 2000. The IAD report itself shows, and the defendants admitted, that the report itself shows the plaintiff did answer this question at least twice. It was only on the third time, when he was asked this once again, that plaintiff simply said, I've got nothing more to say. I answered this question already. I've got nothing more to add. The defendants and the district court believed that a casino employee by the name of Allison Dwyer corroborated Kickles' version of a July 1st conversation. Kickles mentioned about some statement that the plaintiff told her about. And the defendants and the court accepted that this statement was Kickles' version of the July 1st conversation. The IAD report clearly shows that this was impossible. Dwyer referred in the statement summarized by the IAD investigators themselves that the conversation plaintiff was referring to when he talked to Dwyer occurred back one and a half months earlier, which takes us to approximately late May. So the report again shows what they're arguing cannot possibly be what Kickles was referring to. I see I have into my rebuttal time. I'd like to save the rest of this unless the court has any particular arguments or questions.
Ms. Whitson?
May I please the court, counsel, Nadine Wicker, and Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Department of Revenue, the Gaming Board, Brian Hamer, Glenn Bauer, and Joseph Hoy. Summary judgment was correctly granted by the district court to the defendants on the Title VII retaliation and race discrimination claims. This court should affirm. Little failed to establish a prima facie case of race discrimination and retaliation. Specifically, he failed to show that similarly situated employees were treated better, that he was meeting his employer's legitimate work expectations, and that his employer did not honestly believe that he was not adequately performing his job. Turning first to the similarly situated prong of the prima facie case. For both his Title VII discrimination and retaliation claims, it was Little's burden to show that similarly situated employees were treated better. contrary to his suggestion, the law in this circuit is clear that he had to point to someone who is materially comparable, not necessarily identical, but someone who had the same supervisors, the same rules that applied, and were treated better without any legitimate reason. This circuit has said requiring the plaintiff to establish these similarities is common sense because disparity between different rules and decision makers can show that treatment was not based on discrimination. Here, none of the employees pointed to by Little were comparable. First, turning to Barron, there's no evidence that Barron used profanity when she was admonishing some of the employees for their conduct.
Well, how about Oliver? Isn't that, of course, Duble is the worst behavior, but he had a different supervisor. But how about Oliver? Wasn't he? Isn't that his best case?
To begin, there's no evidence that Holly was ever informed of or involved in a decision or received a complaint regarding Oliver, just to start. So there would be nothing to show that a complaint was made about the statement supposedly made by Oliver and that Hahi refused to pass the complaint on. As Your Honor has pointed out, for purposes of the race discrimination claim, Oliver cannot be a comparable because he is also African American.
Mr. Ehrlich said for purpose for on the his retaliation claim, they're comparable. He doesn't have to be white.
Right. The other problem with using Oliver's comparable is that the statement that is attributed to him was told to Little that he heard someone else say it. There's nothing to suggest or corroborate that the statement was actually made in the record. Also, the statement that is attributed to him did not involve the day-to-day operations of the casino, therefore undermining any use of it to compare it to Greg Little's interrupting the casino management and suggesting to Kickles how to operate and deal with his employees.
Well, I don't understand. You know, Oliver took two government salaries for the same job. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Well, isn't that serious misconduct?
Yes, and...
So how was he punished?
There's no evidence in the record as to whether even a complaint was made and how he was punished. This is all conduct that took place before he was a department employee. And Little has presented no evidence to show that some sort of formal complaint was made about his conduct or that they decided to take no action in that instance.
Mm-hmm.
It is important to keep in mind the role of Mr. Hoy in the supervision of the gaming board, people who are assigned from the ISP and the IDOR. If complaints are pushed up the chain to Mr. Hoy, he has the discretion to forward those complaints to the respective employing agencies. If the complaint is never forwarded to him by those on the casino boats, there's no way for him to decide.
Are you saying no complaint about Oliver went to Hoy?
Correct. And there's no, as I said, no evidence that any complaint, formal complaint, had been made to anyone who would have the authority to push that complaint up the chain to the respective agency. In addition, Little has failed to show that he was meeting his employer's legitimate work expectations. The IDOR found that he violated several rules of conduct and completed an investigation, gave Little an opportunity to rebut the allegations made against him at the pre-disciplinary conference. All of this information was reviewed by not only Director Bauer, but Mr. Tapscott, Mr. Acosta, Ms. Morgan, and Mr. Day. All of them, upon reviewing the information, concluded that the recommendation should be to discharge Little. Director Bauer, the former Director Bauer at that time, decided to then recommend his discharge. Even assuming for the sake of argument that Little presented sufficient evidence that he was meeting his employer's legitimate work expectations or that there is some material factual dispute about that question, Little still failed to show that the decision by Bauer, Tapscott, Acosta, Morgan, and Day to recommend his discharge was not based on an honest belief that the report was supported by fact and comprehensive. There's the deposition and affidavits of all of these defendants state that they reviewed the report. They reviewed the information from the further investigation after the pre-disciplinary conference, and they all concluded the same thing, that Little failed to rebut the charges against him. During the investigation, Kickles and Little were interviewed twice, as well as eight other casino employees, about not only the incident that Kickles complained about, but the incident at Harrah's Casino that Little brought up during the investigation. The investigators found that Little failed to refuse to answer some of their questions, and this is documented in the report. And there's nothing to suggest that those who reviewed the report had any notion that the conclusion of the investigators was based on a false or phony investigation or a sham investigation, as Little suggests. It was therefore reasonable for Bauer and the others to rely on the report in reaching their decision to discharge Little. It was their honestly held belief that the report was corroborated and supported by fact. That Little disagreed with the report, as we have heard today and in the brief, does not create a material dispute as to the genuineness of the employer's decision to rely on the report to recommend his discharge. As this court has said, to get into these questions raised by Little is a distraction, because the question is whether the employer's belief was honestly held. Assuming even further that Little established a prima facie case, he failed to show that the decision made by the department was based on pretext. To prevail, Little had to show that the reason relied on was not only a mistake or not good enough, but was phony or a lie. As explained, Little did not show that Kickles, Haughey, Ollett, Oliver, Tapscott, Acosta, Morgan, and Day all used this incident to discharge Little based on race discrimination rather than on their honestly held belief that the report corroborated the fact that he violated several of the rules of the department.
No, the violation is where he's stepping out of the bounds of his authorities. That's intimidating, using his position to intimidate or to harass? Is that kind of the general charge?
Yeah, abuse of authority and conduct unbecoming are the two that stem from the incident with Kickles. Making false statements and not cooperating with the investigation came during the investigatory part of that incident report. Training, yes.
Do you have more?
If this court would like to, I can talk about the First Amendment retaliation claim. I know.
Well, it didn't come up, did it?
Okay. Well, if the court does not have any more questions, I ask that you please confirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Wicker. Mr. Ehrlich, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
I'm not sure how the defendants can say with a straight face that they had no knowledge of a complaint about Oliver. Howard is the chief IAD investigator of the Department of Revenue. He did an IAD investigation of Oliver about his prior misconduct. He would not have done that unless there was some complaint made about Oliver. The case law does not require that plaintiff prove his case strictly by comparative. That was made very clear in Stone and in Rogers v. City of Chicago. Nevertheless, we did present evidence of comparatives. Oliver is one very good example. The district court refused to accept the other comparatives that we raised, we believe, based on a very unduly restrictive interpretation of what a comparative is. There's a lot of case law I cited in my brief, and I cited a lot of facts to support why we believe there were proper comparatives raised. If the court has any questions about that, I'll answer that. Otherwise, I'll move to the next point. Without the comparatives, the plaintiff also presented evidence under the direct method. One example was when the plaintiff complained about a trooper named Uko, who made a statement referring to another employee calling him a stupid nigger. When the plaintiff complained about Uko making this racist statement to Mr. Fullman and to Mark Finn, they warned him that if he complained about this, they would discipline him. District Court did not consider that because it happened more than 300 days before the filing of the EEOC complaint. case law is very clear, prior acts, even though untimely, are still relevant as evidence of background and intent.
Okay, thank you very much, Council. Next case for argument.